Welcome to the Tradar, a Traitor's podcast. I'm Matthew. I am a writer who has spent most of the past 3 years working in unscripted TV development and podcasting. And this podcast is dedicated to the TV phenomenon, the Traitors, all around the world. But for this season, we are returning for the third time to New Zealand for their new season of the show. We'll be deep diving into every episode, recapping the main events, analysing the strategy, the tactics, the gameplay, the secrets, the subterfuge, and joining me each time is a new co-host. Today it will be someone who lots of you are familiar with already, friend of the pod, someone who knows a thing or two about being a traitor very recently. Let's find out who it is. Welcome back to the podcast, Magicker. And Magicker, lots of our listeners know you very well. We've got lots of new listeners from New Zealand. Maybe you could introduce yourself. Tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do.
Yes, so always happy to be back on the pod. I am a musician, I'm a songwriter, producer, and performer, and more recently a life coach. But above all, I'm a massive fan of The Traitors. I've watched many, many international seasons, all of the English-speaking ones, nearly all of the French ones, because I do speak French, and a few Scandinavian ones as well.
And a recent traitor victor yourself. We may come to that a little bit later. And Magicka, this is your first time on this season of the podcast for New Zealand season three. We're going to talk about episode three today. How have you been enjoying the show so far?
Yeah, loving it, really loving it. And it's one of those ones, New Zealand's a smaller country, that the budget is a little bit smaller, although it looks pretty good. But there's something about the editing that I'm really enjoying. It feels closer to the UK editing, a little bit more time to breathe, much less manic. We've also been talking about Traitors Canada, specifically the French language Canadian version, and comparing and contrasting them because they're airing at the same time. Canada is so manic. There's really loud music the whole way through, and bish bash bosh, and this happens and that happens, and it's quite difficult to follow and a little bit exhausting, actually. Very different form of editing, and I much prefer what they're doing in New Zealand. Really enjoying it, enjoying Madeline as host. Great cast. So yeah, I'm here for it.
Yeah, I'm loving Madeline as a host, and yeah, I feel like I know all the players. I mean, by the end of episode two, this is me as a podcast host making notes and writing things down. I knew everybody's names. I have a sense of who everybody is to an extent. So yeah, I feel like I'm being nicely guided through it. And here we are at episode three. I want to update people on a couple of things before we dive right into the episode. Last time, I made a little joke about Chloe and the cat because in the true or false Gungy Slimy mission, there was this statement about Chloe having a tailless cat called Chunky, and I was made a joke on the pod saying, "Oh, I want to know more about this cat. Tell me." Not only did Chloe post a little video on Instagram and has posted several pictures of her real cat, Chloe has sent us a voice note just to give us a little more info. So I hope everyone is excited as I am. Let's take a listen.
Hello, Chloe from Traders New Zealand here. I have been waiting my whole life for someone else to ask me about my cat, so thank you. He does, in fact, have no tail. His name is Chonk, often called Chonky. So when Madeline said Chloe has a tailless cat named Chunky, I really thought I was up there and not going to get slimed. I thought someone must have misheard me, or I misheard, or it was an accent thing. But no, those tricky producers, they were tricking me, and my confident and not being slimed self went right on into the slime, so that was not fun. That was a surprise indeed. Side note, by the way, I was not disagreeing with Ryan about Ryan's personality. That would be weird. I was disagreeing to someone else's summary of his personality, Debbie, that we were in the car on the first day together. So, not sure if that makes it any better. You got to do what you got to do with the first round table. You just got to get some people out, really, don't you? But just to clarify, while I'm here, thanks. We love the pod.
Thank you, Chloe. And I feel that should be just a regular segment now of the pod. Update on Chonk. I will make a graphic. I'll Magicka, you could come up with some theme music just for that segment. And Chloe, give us more updates. Thank you for that. I also have a little voice note from Dave that I thought you particularly might be really interested in Magicka because it's about pronunciation and accents and different people's names. So Dave, well, he sent us a voice note. I'll play it. He can explain. Dave has sort of led this project. He's got a website called ProPronounce. .co.nz, if I've written that down. If I've said that wrong, I'll put the correct link in the episode description. I checked it out. So Dave does a lot of commentary for sports in New Zealand, and so in his career has had to think about pronouncing people's names correctly and has been told at points in his career to actively not bother pronouncing people's names correctly and just pronounce it the white way. That was something that someone once said to him, and he, obviously took issue with that. So I'll play you now what Dave sent to me.
G'day, mate. How you doing? I just wanted to send a quick message just to say thanks very much for all the effort you put into our fantastic game. And I don't mean just the New Zealand one. I mean globally. It's a fantastic franchise and we love it. And you put a lot of effort into it. So I just wanted to acknowledge that and say thanks very much. We really appreciate it, especially on this side of the camera, I guess. I've actually got a project which is about pronunciation, pronouncepro.co.nz, and in my role as a ground announcer and a rugby commentator. It's really difficult for me to get the pronunciation for people. So I thought I might give you a little heads up just regarding some of the cast members, just to give you a hand. Aroha is how you pronounce her name. Also Maruia. So the R is like a D, so you shouldn't have a problem with that. Keanu, you got right. And Janaya. Yeah, as I say, it's all about respect for me. And I think you do a fantastic job. So yeah, Aroha, Maruia, Janaya, and Keanu. But look, hey, thanks again. Really appreciate all the effort and the work you put into it. And yeah, I hope things go well and you enjoy the rest of the season. Thanks so much, mate.
Thank you so much, Dave. And I read out the website wrong. So it's Pronounce Pro, not Pro Pronounce. Pronouncepro.co.nz. And yeah, I'm glad that you sent that in, Dave. I'm gonna try my best. And I think maybe with a Scottish accent, Aroha, I rolling my R's might be a little easier for me. I don't know. But does that sort of clarify any pronunciations for you, Magicka?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't have gone with Aruha
Yeah,
with the emphasis
Aroha.
at the start. Aruha, which is
Yeah.
beautiful. And I love the fact that Madeline, clearly, whenever she pronounces people at the round table, she's getting it right. You can tell she's getting it right. And every time I'm like, ooh, how did she say Maruia? It's like, yeah, it was only in the last episode that I realized that Maruia and Maria were two different people, and it wasn't just that people were absolutely butchering Maruia's name and saying, let's just call her Maria. So I'm quite glad about that. There are actually two different people. All the more reason to pronounce them properly.
Exactly. Yes. So I'm going to endeavour to pronounce them properly from here on in. And I'm sticking with Violet rather than Violet because, as I said, a family member has sent me a wee message and said, thank you for saying Violet. That is how it's supposed to be pronounced. So I'm going with it. There we go. I think we're ready for our episode 3 deep dive, Magicka. Here we go. Episode 2 ended with this cliffhanger then. We had a tie, we had a revote, we were waiting for that final vote to come in. It was either going to be Elliot or Ryan, and Harrison was the decider. Here we go, we're back at the round table, and we're right in there. Harrison flips over his slate and reveals that he has voted for Ryan, telling the others this is why the pitches are important, their last minute plea to save their life. And that's a change for him. He had originally voted for Elliot. Lots of shocked reactions and gasps around the table. And so Ryan is gone. I know you're not a massive fan of doing predictions just for the sake of it. Had you had any inkling about what way it might go here?
I found it very difficult because several people flipped, didn't they? But then as the episode goes on, we understand that they flipped because he made the biggest slip of the tongue I think I've ever heard in any franchise, which is to say, before I was picked. I mean, just obviously, we know what he meant before the selection was made, before I knew that I was going to be a faithful. For us watching it, knowing that he's not a traitor, it was just surreal. Before I was picked, oh mate, you're gone. You are gone. It then should have been a landslide. Everyone should have been, you just said you were picked. Bye.
And ex that's exactly what a couple of people said last time and continued to see this episode. It was just that thing that he said. I just couldn't ignore it. Before then, Ryan stands up to give his goodbye speech and says, "It's nothing personal. I love you all. It's been so cool. Love the experience. I am a faithful." Someone round the table, I don't know who it is, someone literally yelps out, just goes, ah! And we see lots of reaction shots of them all just looking horrified, which is kind of funny to me as an outsider because I get some of them were so convinced by that mistake that he just made that they thought, oh my God, oh, we've caught him. I can't believe it. But to look so hard, I think it's a wee bit funny because they almost always get a faithful out the first time round. Like this is usually what happens. It's not a huge shock, but hey, I wasn't in the room. So off he goes, Madeline goes, and the players have some time to debrief and figure out what on earth just happened. Elliot has a little hug with Kate, his bestie, who voted for him last time we saw him, saying, "No, bestie." And he also pulls Violette aside because he wants to clear the air and just say, "Look, I'm not mad, I get it, I understand," which is quite nice. It's quite refreshing actually to see someone come out and just say, "Look, I get it, it's fine, it's a game, I understand." I think that does him a favor, to just be like, "Look, it's okay, it's okay. I'm not coming for you now just because you came for me." So they at least some of them can differentiate between personal relationships and we are playing a game. But the thing is, Violette is now very suspicious of Kate because of that weird switch of vote at the round table, because she did the opposite of what Harrison did. She had voted for Ryan and then switched to Elliot, who she got on really well with. Seems very odd. People are noticing it. And Keanu is telling us and Miv how the game is going exactly how he'd planned. He's feeling very confident. And he tells us there's more entertainment to come. He's looking forward to the conclave because who runs those conversations? Me. And I just can't help but think they're probably showing us lots of these clips of Keanu being very overconfident because a fall is coming at some point. Like he's, I don't know. It's but he's so confident it can't be a good thing, I don't think. Who knows? We'll see what happens, but
I mean, this episode, we're going to get into it, but this episode has been fascinating because it's very unusual. In fact, I can't really think of any other examples where, as soon as this is pretty, because it took a while for us to figure out who the traitors were, the final traitor, Brad, and then now all three of them. It's like a love triangle. They're all like, yeah, but if I go forward with you, then we have to ditch the other one. If I go forward with you, I have to ditch the other one. Immediately, like they are all so suspicious, and they all seem to be considering any combination of what's the other one that they trust going forward. And it's very odd so early. And speaking as a successful traitor, in the recent online game, I can tell you that me and my fellow traitor Jack, we did research, and by listening to this very podcast, I mean I was on it, but checking back in on it, and knowing that how to win as a traitor, stick together for as long as you can. And yeah, I mean, you can't help but thinking that with Keanu, like, pride comes before a fall, surely. I mean, we said that, although, about a recent franchise, or not a recent franchise, but a franchise where there was an incredibly cocky, over-the-top traitor, and that person did end up getting through to the end, but it didn't go well for them when they were there.
It feels like they understand something important, that you can't 100% trust anyone at any time. So they've got that idea in their mind that I'm a traitor and I'm working with other traitors, and I'm very aware that they could turn on me, and I have to remember that. But paranoia's got the better of them, and they've gone so far with their worries about that that it's flipped around to, well, I'm going to get them first.
Do you think maybe the whole mini twist of Brad choosing his own, traitorness? Do you think maybe that, because they before he came in, they had said, oh, well, it's just us two, isn't it? And then whoever this is, there was something a little bit unstable about that. And I think there's been a power struggle ever since.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, it seems to have. Even though it felt like Jill and Keanu only had moments together in the Conclave, maybe they actually were there for half an hour having a chat and filming, and then we're told, right, okay, we're going to pause. The third traitor's going to come in. So maybe that was enough time for them to have that little initial bond and promised each other they'd get to the end and all that. So yeah, I think you're right. We then move to the Conclave. The traitors meet, and Bradley reckons they're doing a great job, but Keanu sort of he corrects them and says, well, hold on, Harrison did mention both of your names, so we're not 100% in the clear. They move on to talking about their murder possibilities, and they start with Janiyah. They think it will cause chaos. It will point away from Keanu and Brad because, well, they both get on really well with Janiyah, so people might not instantly think to look that way. And at this point, while Keanu is saying this, we cut to Brad saying, this is making me very wary of him. He's already willing to cut his friend from the game. Okay, I need to be careful. Their next option is Maruya. Brad thinks, yeah, she could hold her own. If it came to at the round table and she suspected any one of them, that could be worrying because she's a good speaker. She could really hone in on someone, and they don't want to face her in an argument. And they think about Sam because she's too nice. They think, and they don't say this explicitly, but I think their thinking is she won't get banished. Everybody likes her, she's popular, so maybe the only way out is us getting rid of her. And they make the decision. I sort of, again, we don't see this. I sort of immediately assume they're not going to get rid of Sam because of Keanu's connection with her. He's told the traitors about it already, so I assume that they're not going to go in that direction. I'd be surprised if Keanu let them do that. So,
There's always something to be said for getting rid of the pure faithful, the one who just seems so sweet and so innocent, they have to be a faithful. But this early in the game, I don't think that's the right way to go. I think you want to make a bit more impact, because I just think, bless her, she would have gone and then they would have moved on and it wouldn't have made any impact in the game, really. When you get through to the final stages, you need to be very careful about a player like that because they just seem too faithful. But this is really early days. I don't think you should be going for, again, speaking as a successful traitor. I'm only saying that because I've played the game, a couple of times with you online and the in-person experience in London, and I was a faithful the other times. So to be in the turret and actually plotting was so interesting. It was so interesting, Matthew. Like, we were just like devilish planning everything. And I felt really guilty. I was just literally saying, oh no, but they've only just logged on and we're immediately going to ditch them. Although, future players, Matthew has a very clever mechanic where you are not expelled from the game. You still get to participate if you have been murdered or banished. But yeah, I wouldn't go for someone so quiet this early in the game. I don't think that's a good strategic move. It might pay off in the long run, but I think you've got more to gain by getting rid of a big player. I was sh really shocked when they shortlisted Janiyah and Maruya, and even more shocked by their choice of who to murder.
Yes, and with that we move to breakfast. Poor Ryan has the Red Cross through his portrait. The players start to arrive. Brad's in the first group and tells his group, that includes Debbie, that he's a bit annoyed by what Harrison said last night, this bromance suggestion. He thinks it's a very obvious attempt by Harrison to create a buddy, an ally here. So Brad's pretending, he thinks, Or maybe he's not pretending, but he finds it a bit too contrived. He's not sure about whether that's genuine or not. Obviously, Debbie is Harrison's mum, so she's finding all of this tough, and she's remembering that her son got 3 votes at the round table last night, so that's worrying too. Next group arrives, all hugs all round. They're talking about nerves at night time, not knowing if they're going to come back. James even said that he cried when he got back to the room last night, just as a sort of stress reliever. And I can believe that. I can imagine this really stressful environment. And then to top it off with a round table, which ends in a tie and then a revote, and then somebody goes who's a favourite. It would be an awful lot on your first, first couple of days here. I can imagine it's a lot to take on. Dave is reflecting on the banishment too, and admits maybe he was wrong about Elliot. Maybe he says maybe he's just a flamboyant guy, and I'm looking the wrong way. I thought that was quite interesting that all of it's not just Dave, as the episode goes on, they all just sort of back off Elliot rather than double down. Maybe it's not surprising because that tends to be the way of it in the Traitors. Rather than going, well, it was a tie, and we went for Ryan, and he was a faithful. So let's just look at surely it's Elliot then. Maybe we were right in the first place, but they don't. They actually believe the way that Elliot defended himself and his plea for his life speech. It worked, and so everybody is looking in other places.
It is odd though, isn't it? Because to have so much sus, and it must just be like you said. The person defended themselves so well, you say, okay, well, you were put under stress, you were put under the spotlight, and you passed. So you're fine for now. But even still, I don't know, it's so interesting in this game, in so many versions, how then suddenly the focus just shifts totally. And that happened to me the first time we played your online game. I had, because I'm on the podcast and people knew me from the podcast, we had the whole big dog theory, and people were like, well, it's going to be one of Matthew or David, Magical or David. And so I had a lot of sus at the first round table, managed to get my way out of it, and then ended up going all the way to the end. So I experienced that myself the whole time. I was thinking, hang on a minute, I thought I'd have to defend myself for the whole game, but I seem to have got off scot-free. It's fascinating. It must be a psychological thing. Like, we've looked at you, we've cleared you, let's move on.
Yeah, I think it must be the idea that you want to question everybody at some point. So they maybe feel like, well, we've kind of dealt with Elliot. So maybe we'll come back to him. But he's had his moment in the spotlight. Rather than use another round table to throw votes his way, let's test the waters elsewhere. Let's give everybody a chance to be, in the hot seat. Maybe that's the sort of groupthink that ends up happening.
Yeah, it could be.
So the next group arrives at breakfast. Harrison is in this group, and he talks to Hannah very quickly about how, well, we've got a lot to unpack about last night's round table, which was it made me think. It was quite interesting that he immediately came in and said, oh, so much to catch up on. Because I thought, well, after the round table every night, we do see them all. I always say they debrief, they come out, they have a chat. I wonder if they don't really get that much time though before, okay, off to bed. If the next morning they still come in saying, oh, we've got so much to talk about, as if they didn't really get time last night. It's just something that struck me here with Harrison's urgency. He also talks in his Matter interview about Aaron. He's wondering why did Aaron vote for him last night, and two others voted. He's thinking, is it three traitors who had all decided beforehand to vote for me? What's going on? As viewers, we know that's not the truth. Next group arrives, and Sam is in this group. So as I suspected, yeah, I'm sure Keanu has convinced his fellow traitors to just keep her in the game for now. So it's either going to be Maruya or Janaya, who Maruya, I should roll my R a little more, who are going to be murdered. Already, I feel like Harrison is doing a little bit much. We don't know who's murdered yet. We're still waiting on a few people or a couple of people. And I notice him saying like, oh, Maruya's not here. Oh, I didn't even notice. Oh, she voted for me last night. Oh, this doesn't look good. I sort of want to say, Harrison, calm down. Like, just stop. Wait until you see his back. Don't. And actually, I made a little note to myself here to say that Magicka went we so for listeners who have no idea what we're talking about, I host online games of the Traitors. More info on that to come. And the past weekend, a whole group of us played Magicka was a Traitor, and I noticed from my perspective, you played a much quieter game that I'm sure you deliberately did. And one or two of the other players who'd played before also said, "You're much quieter than last time." And I mean, I'm guessing that was a sort of deliberate move to just stay in the background.
Yes and no, I've got to be honest. I was a bit tired, and it kind of, as we headed towards kind of past 9 p.m., I was a little bit like, oh, and because I'd eaten some food around about, I don't know, in one of the turrets, I was shoving some food into my face. And I was like, oh no, I'm getting post-digestive slump. And I was like, this is not going to go well. Wake up, wake up, wake up. So it was partly that I was a little bit sleepy. But also it was just going so well. It was just going so well. No one was questioning me or my fellow traitor. So it's like, why? I was trying to chip in every so often when it was a music mission. I was like, right, I'm in it, be present, be there, this is my moment. I think it's just simply because, like we just said, because I had so much suspicion on me the last time we played and I was a faithful, I had to just step up. I couldn't have just gone, oh well, I don't know. I had to be a very active player. And like this, I mean, we see it time after time, the traitors, when you do want to coast a little bit. You want to coast so that people, if people aren't mentioning you, don't start drawing attention, particularly in the first few rounds, because they're desperate for anything. And if you just say the wrong thing, you just say the T word instead of the F word, and before you know it, you know, you spotlight on you. Just play it cool, but be ready to defend yourself. I was thinking as it went on, people are going to start to say you're being too quiet. So when they did say that, someone did, I just said, I said, well, it is quite late here and I'm getting a bit tired, but also, you haven't suspected me. If you have any questions or whatever, I'm really willing to defend. We've been looking at other people, so that's the way it's gone. The whole time I was a traitor.
And listeners, if you are in New Zealand or maybe Australia and thinking, I can't play, time zone different, not going to work. I've mentioned this before. A couple of people have sent in messages saying, oh, yeah, I'd love to do a game if you could make it work for a different time zone. So I have. I'm going to, at the end of this podcast episode, tell you a new game that I have set a date for. Actually, the tickets are online now. And how you can play at a reasonable time in your time zone if you are down there in the southern hemisphere on the other side of the world. Anyway, back to the episode. Yes, I reckoned that maybe Harrison was doing a bit too much. And then, knock, knock, the door creeps open at a haunting pace, and it is Maruya who enters along with Elliot. So Janaya is gone. Interesting that they put Elliot in that last little pair. I sort of thought, oh, that I sort of thought that didn't do him any favors in looking faithful, but maybe it's the opposite. Anyway, I mean, he doesn't. He seem again. He seems to be fine as the episode goes on. No one is really looking at him at this point, or he's not at the top of their lists. So yes, Janaya is not here. We flash back, and yeah, the traitors picked him because it doesn't tie back to anyone in the turret, but it might reflect badly on Aaron because Janaya voted for Aaron. Bradley does suggest he felt a little pressured into this decision by Keanu. He even says that, oh, it's Keanu's show. But and I thought, well, Bradley, if that's how you feel, you have to do something about it. You can't just let Keanu take over. You know, you no one's going to step up and intervene, so you might have to do that yourself. We see Janaya get his letter, and yeah, even he thinks it must be Aaron then. I voted for Aaron, so this is his payback. Back to Brekkie, Elliot immediately points out, hey, Janaya voted for Aaron, what's going on? And then host Madeline arrives. She tells them the breakfast buffet is a little less buff. And she'll hang Janaya's portrait in the Janaya Fitness Memorial Center.
You slightly undermined the quality of her joke because she actually said, and I'm not going to do the accent, although I'm so tempted to say breakfast rather than breakfast. The breakfast buffet is a little less buff, eh?
Oh, I
That
did
was the.
not even get the full joke. Okay, that's even better.
Do
Well done,
not
Madeline.
undermine Madeline's comedic
Right.
value. She is.
I.
Her delivery was on
Perfect.
point. She is already a queen.
Okay, I messed up. I got it wrong. Well done, Madeline. I love it. So there we go. Yes, and even a few others make little jokes. Keanu's like, yeah, he was hot, but hey, the game comes first. She gives them their clue for the mission, which is find what's hidden, hold it tight, but if the dark finds you first, kiss your treasure goodnight. And I'm sort of trying to figure out what I think it might mean. Is it a little haunted? We've seen missions before on the Traitors where players go into a room and they look around at all the objects. It's like an amplified version of Kim's game, the kids' memory game. Lights go out, things go missing, lights go. It ends up being not totally dissimilar to that, but I wondered if they were going to do that same thing again. We leave breakfast and we have some reality time around the castle. By the way, I did not invent this phrase, reality time. Sometimes people keep saying, oh, Matthew calls it reality time. I'm calling it that because they call it that on the show. I'm just repeating what I've heard from behind the scenes that when you're on set in the Traitors, it's okay, reality time. So I'm adopting that phrase. Aaron is very aware that Janiyah's murder puts a bit of a spotlight on him. So he's on his mission to say his piece to as many people as possible because he thinks. I'm a little bit confused by Aaron here, actually. I thought he made a mistake the first time. He talks about, oh, in case I get murdered. And I thought, oh, he meant banished. But he doesn't. He says it a couple of times. In case I get murdered, I want to tell everybody what I think so that I'm like leaving behind some evidence. Why does he think he would get murdered rather than banished if he's worried that people are looking at him now because of Janiyah's murder? I didn't know why Aaron thought he might get murdered
I
now.
think the paranoia about getting murdered is just always going to be there if you are a faithful. Because you just it's totally out of your control. At least at the round table you can try and defend yourself. You know, it is a brutal game. Like you just literally go to bed, wake up, and then the producers tell you, "Yeah, you're out." You know, so I think that's probably just forefront of his mind. At least at the round table, if he could see it was going one way, he could say, "Well, if you're going to vote for me, then look at this person, look at this person." But if you're murdered, you don't get a chance to continue that at all.
Maybe, just maybe, Aaron may come on the podcast and clear some things up. Just putting that out there into the universe. We'll see what happens. He takes Sam aside and he tells her that if he, Aaron, is murdered, and he makes quite a lot of leaps here. He says, if I'm murdered and you find out that Harrison's a traitor, then I think it also means that Bradley's a traitor. And Sam's like, yes, on board. Oh, I thought the same. I thought Bradley too. It's quite a lot of jumps and logic to get to that point, but he's sort of half right accidentally, I suppose, that Bradley's a traitor. And then Sam gives us her reasoning. Why does she suspect Bradley? Well, it's that back to that first night, and I clocked it. We talked about it on the pod a little when Rachel was still here. Poor Rachel is gone but not forgotten, and she was quite upfront and. And I think Rachel probably did this to everybody, but they showed us her saying it to Bradley, probably half jokingly, like, "So are you a traitor?" or asking him a question as if he's a traitor. And he sort of dodged it and didn't answer straight away and made a little joke and eventually said, "Oh no, yeah, no, I'm a faithful." Sam caught on to it, thinks there was something a bit odd in the way he responded. And she has other data points, but we don't hear what they are just yet. This whole data points thing, by the way, I know I was laughing and saying, what a funny expression. Why would you? And then David Bloomberg, who was on the pod, said, I don't think that's a strange expression at all, but I'm an engineer. And some other listeners have sent me messages saying, why is that weird? I would use that phrase regularly. It's just me not being from a mathematical, sciencey world, perhaps. It feels a little foreign and formal to me, but.
I had this when I was studying for my diploma in coaching. They kept on talking about outcomes, which is a perfectly normal thing to talk about in a coaching environment. And after about half an hour of talking about outcomes, I had to say, "I'm sorry, course leader, I understand what the word outcomes means, but I genuinely don't really know what it means because I've never used that word in my life. Because I'm a musician, we don't use the word outcomes. You have product, like you produce something, a song or a performance, whatever. But what is an out? So an outcome is what someone's expecting to end up with at the end of a meeting. Or I was like, okay, new concept, outcomes. I can use that word.
We can't we I endeavor to use that word at some point in this podcast episode just to
Okay.
sort of, bring it into the conversation and do a full circle thing. Okay.
I'd appreciate that.
That's my outcome, is to use the word outcome. Of course, we then cut straight to Bradley. After Sam and Aaron both saying they suspect him quite heavily, we cut to him saying, I don't think I'm on anyone's radar. I really want someone to say traitor, of course. I'm fine, and no one's looking at me. So something's not, but maybe Bradley's not quite catching on to what's going on around him, perhaps. Unless Sam and Aaron are being very secretive about that and no one else thinks it. Brad and Jill then meet up and have a little secret traitory whisper to talk about what names they're hearing. Kate is one of them. Neither of them, again, feel worried about themselves. But Brad then goes on and lets Jill know he's not really on board with Keanu. He's feeling quite pressured by him. He reckons Keanu is going to be ruthless if he has to be. Cue Keanu appears right at that moment. Hey guys. Jill obviously sees him coming and goes, hello. It's so Mrs. Doubtfire coded with the face and the cake. She's just like, hello. And then she's telling us in her confessional, her Miv, that she's worried about Brad and how paranoid he is about Keanu, but also she knows she might have to be quite ruthless. So, like you said earlier, all three of them are, it's like the Spider-Man gif of them just all pointing at one another, like, are you going to turn on me first? I have to turn on you first. Who should I pair up with? So that is all going on right here in this little conversation.
I really enjoyed, I mean, for us as viewers, I think our instinct is always like, no, all three traitors are sat with each other. That's dangerous. Whereas actually, the exact opposite is true. If you never speak to your fellow traitors, then that also looks super suspicious. And to see these
I
three
think so.
people super relaxed around each other subconsciously is going to give the message, well, I don't think those three are traitors. They wouldn't just be sat there doing that. But wasn't it interesting when one other person joined suddenly? You just were like, oh no, they can't talk about traitor business anymore because one of them is not a traitor. I love the moments like that when traitors actually in, in plain sight are talking game.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, I feel like if I was playing the game, I would be horrendously paranoid at all times to talk to a fellow traitor in case someone was. Because we see a lot of people on traitors eavesdropping and creeping around corridors and trying to listen in. I would be endlessly worried about that. It's time for the mission. We're just sort of suddenly here. We don't really get any content from the cars, and we're in an abandoned warehouse. Ooh, they gather as Madeline talks to them over the PA system and tells them that their task is to find silver bars, $9,000 worth, and five shields hidden around the warehouse, buried amongst a bunch of junk scattered around all over the place. However, there's also a ghoul. Ah, the ghoul will be hunting them down. If they are caught, anything that they have with them will be lost, confiscated. It's kind of a game of hide and seek as well, really, because there are lights that are going to signal when they can search, blue lights, when they have to hide, red lights, and when it's hunting time, complete blackout. I quite like this. I think this is fun. It's creepy, it's scary. I've never the ghoul character, I've talked about this on the podcast before. There is a kids show in the UK, well, when I was younger, that had that. Oh, and someone, listeners before have told me the answer to this and I've already forgotten. There's a kids show, and one of the games in it was like a chessboard, because it's like another traitor's mission that we see a lot. And there's this creepy character that's supposed to be a bit like Darth Vader, I think. It breathes heavily and it's got a big cloak on and it follows you around and it puts its arms around you to catch you. And anyway, this reminded me of that very much. It's fun. I'd like to play it. I like scaring myself by watching horror films and things. I don't know why I do this.
Well, the great thing about this mission in particular is that it gave me great opportunity to work out a few puns, which I will just scatter into the next little bit of this podcast. The first one I want to say is that I think that the person who was playing role of ghoul was definitely enjoying themselves because you could say, "Ghouls just want to have fun." Thank you. That is my first attempt at a pun. There will be more. Stick
Excellent.
around.
It's funny that they had to find silver bars and not gold bars, you might say.
I haven't gone that direction with my puns, but I accept your tangential direction with the ghoul puns.
I also am thinking I should employ this in my online game. I should just go, okay, everyone, hide in your houses and I'll look for you on camera. Oh, wait. That might not work that well. I'll workshop it. Off they go, they're running around, searching, crawling, rummaging. Hannah and Maria both spot a shield, but Maria grabs it first, and then red lights, hiding time. The ghoul catches a couple of players. Now, as I'm watching it, I don't know the twist that's coming. I didn't see the twist coming, actually, which I like. I don't want to know the twists. The ghoul. Really, it really made me laugh. Just catches them and goes, "You're found." Slightly ruins the illusion to just hear this big Kiwi voice yelling at them, "You're found."
I think, yeah, I agree. It was hilarious, and I thought, wow, okay, budget. We love it. We love creativity with a in a budget. Okay, but actually, surely in post they could have just put a little bit of pitch shift on that voice modulator, so it's like, "You're found." That would have been so much better. Anyway, it's a shame really that the ghoul didn't give more of a dramatic performance, but then big ghouls don't cry, so there are more.
Absolutely. I was thinking the exact same thing, word for word. We're back to blue lights. We've got Kate finding a shield, red lights, more, you're found, despite Elliot desperately hiding in a coffin and trying to keep the lid closed. And the ghoul is, of course, stealing all of their silver bars as they're found. We go another round, more silver's confiscated, no further shields are found. And by the end, well, they reconvene with Madeline. She tells them that they've found $4,000, but reveals that she hasn't been completely honest.
Well,
And she asks,
the
oh,
thing is
yes.
about Madeline is that when the ghoul was in her office, and I've thought that Madeline had a little glint in her eye, and I'm wondering if she kissed a ghoul and she liked it. I've only got two more of these, don't worry. We're nearly at the
Okay.
end.
Well, if the ghoul is still around at breakfast tomorrow, there'll be a cornflake ghoul.
Cornflake Girl, that was another one off the list. Thank you.
and so as she's revealing to them, she hasn't been totally honest and says, asks her ghoulish, she either says ghoulish fiend or ghoulish friend to come out. And I sort of think, oh, I know what's happening just as it's about to happen. It's Michael. This is wild. They all go mad. Yay, Michael's back. And so there goes my theory. In episode one of this podcast, Traitor Star Jane and I were both very confident and said, nah, he's gone. He's not coming back. He's definitely out. Here he is. He is back. I was tricked. Again, I guess I like being tricked. I like when I don't see everything coming. And Madeline reveals that actually, unless I've misunderstood, the money that he's stolen will be added to the prize. So it was all a little bit pointless, this mission, but fun. Fun to watch, a nice little gimmick. And I assumed as soon as he took the hood off and she said, it's Michael, I thought, oh, he's back, he's back. Yeah, he's back in the game. But then, and then I thought, oh, I was getting ahead of myself. So I assumed he was back. And then I thought, oh, they should have made him do something, like he had to buy his way back. But and then that is exactly what happens, that he walks off and she goes, oh, no, wait a minute, Michael, come back. I've got this offer. He can either take, I think, the 5,000 that he took away at the start, plus the money that he's now confiscated, which is 7,500, and still leave, or he can put it all back into the collective prize pot and rejoin the game. And of course he does. He says, "Yes, this is what I came here for. I wanted to play this game. I'm back in. Hooray!" And
Hooray! Or as Beyoncé would say, who runs the world? Ghouls, ghouls!
are there more, or are
There's one
we, is that the
more.
end
There's
of the,
one
oh, there's
more
one
that
more.
will
Okay.
be relevant in a second.
Okay, great. We are heading back to the castle. We're in the cars. Michael is here now, of course. He's with Aroha, Debbie, and Aaron, who immediately joke. They're joking about Michael being a traitor or not. And he tells us immediately in an interview, well, he's not a faithful. But, and everybody just, it seems like they all just assume it. They just
You
assume.
mean he is a
Sorry,
faithful?
a faithful, sorry. Yes, oh goodness. They assume that he's a faithful, but he realizes, oh, maybe that's not a good thing because it makes me an ideal target for murder. Okay, that's on his mind.
Yeah,
And
in many ways, what he was saying to the camera was, and this is my last one, thanks for bearing with me, listeners. What he's trying to say is, I'm not a ghoul, not yet a traitor.
that was lovely. And
That
I
was
think
the
you should
finale.
release an EP,
An
actually, of
EP,
all
a
of these
ghoul
songs.
EP. It could be called Ghouls and Boys. Perfect. Okay, I'm done.
No, it should be called ABBA Gould, even though ABBA has nothing to do with
Ghoul.
it. You could throw an ABBA cover in there somewhere. Or you could adopt four different characters. Okay, I'm getting carried away. I have to stop. Back to the episode. In this, we'll put this on the Patreon that doesn't exist, but I'll create it just for this nonsense chat. In more than one other car, several players are discussing Kate for a couple of reasons. A, they know she's an actress, and they've found maybe some of her behaviours feel like she is acting and they're not quite believable, perhaps. And secondly, it's the vote last night. It's that flip from Ryan to Elliot. They can't quite understand it. Other players are also chatting about Brad as a suspect, too. So that is ongoing under the surface. We arrive back at the castle. Dave immediately comes to chat to Jill. She's one of his allies that he's made. Gives her the heads up on Kate and Brad, that those are probably the two names that are going to come up tonight. And this is alarm bells for Jill a little, like one of our fellow traitors is being named by various people. So she quickly decides, well, she's going to have to side with one of her fellow traitors over the other. It's going to be Keanu. So she goes straight to him, not only to tell him that other people are talking about Brad, but to tell him what Brad was saying this morning, that Brad is not 100% on board with working alongside Keanu. So Jill's just going all out. She's just like, not only might we have to vote for him, but he was saying things about you this morning. So Jill has made her mind up. It's her and Keanu all the way. I think she's a bit more, well, I'm torn on Jill. Sometimes I think Jill's doing a great job, and other times I think, oh, she shouldn't have said that, shouldn't have done that. But at this moment, I thought, oh, she's more savvy than I thought, because she is choosing her ally very wisely. She doesn't just say to Keanu, we might have to vote for Brad tonight, heads up. She also does say, but don't come too hard for him. You can't make it obvious that you're also a traitor and that's how you know he's a traitor. It'll be too obvious as traitor on traitor action. So at least she's sort of playing out different scenarios in her head and saying, well, we might have to vote for him, but we have to be careful about how we vote for him. So I do want to give her credit for that. And his response in interview is very interesting. Now, it could have been taken out of context completely. Maybe he said this at some other time. But he says, I'm going to vote for Brad when I want to vote for him, and no one else is going to tell me when. Again, I think Keanu, I think you're probably doing a very savvy thing, which is playing up to the cameras. And yeah, we want great personalities, and you're definitely a standout of this cast already. And I'm enjoying you. You're very funny. But take it easy. Like, don't get too carried away. Like, don't let all of this actually affect how you play the game. Like, it's fine to say this in the clips to the camera, and we can have a little giggle, but maybe don't actually play like that.
I think he is playing it up for the camera, which again makes for great entertainment. You have to wonder when he was asked about this. I've said this on other episodes, like they cannot be going into that confessional chair in that little armchair and talking to the producers after every conversation. So this it might be that it was more like, okay, so talk me through who you decided to vote for and who influenced your decision at the round table. And he was like, well, Jill came to me and said, or present tense, Jill comes up and says, I need to vote for Bradley. Well, I'm not going to vote for him. I'll vote for him when I want to. And that could have been much later, because as it was, that was not the direction of travel for the group to vote for him. So actually, he's because I like you, I was a bit like, whoa, this is a little bit like, immediately pushing back on Jill, but we don't know when that conversation was had necessarily.
It's interesting that you mention how the confessionals work their magic art, because I actually had an email from Vinny, faithful listener. Now, Vinny sent me this email before he'd seen episodes 3 and 4, but suggested that he spotted something in the confessionals that could have been a little bit of a spoiler. Vinny said, I've not watched episodes 3 and 4 yet, but I predict that Ryan will be banished based on a confessional wardrobe clue, combined with highlights from the entire series. When we get these highlights, like here's what's to come, here's a hit in the next episode, shown in the opening minutes of episode one. Until I noticed it, I was worried for Elliot because he's a minority, and we know how that goes in the Traitors. Now, Vinny doesn't say what the wardrobe clue is, but it's something that very observant viewers have spotted in the past at times in different Traitors franchises, that sometimes you can tell from what somebody is wearing that it's a different outfit from the rest of the confessionals. And there's you think, why are they wearing something different? They must have filmed this the next day. And now, Vinny, if you can clarify this, please do. So anyway, Vinny, you were correct. That is what ended up happening. So there must have been something about what he was wearing. So just, I'm just saying, viewers, sometimes maybe there's little clues there. In fact, I'm not going to spoil anything. There's something in one of the confessionals in the next episode. Now, I've watched the next episode, Magic, I know you haven't, that gave me a little clue about something that may happen. So I'll come back to that in episode 4. Anyway, we move on. We're back to Sam and Aaron talking about Brad. And Sam is affirming that she's happy to bring up Brad tonight at the round table. She gets Chloe on board. Although there's a bit of a snag here. She says, Chloe, remember, we were in that conversation with Rachel, and Rachel was questioning Bradley about being a traitor. Do you remember how weird it was the way he responded? Chloe's just like, I don't remember that. She sort of says, well, I'll kind of back you. Like, I'll say I was there, but I don't really remember what Rachel said. So that's not filling Sam with complete confidence now. And it's time for the round table to commence shortly after this. I was sorry, for some reason I thought you were going to bring in another ghoul pun there, so like a pause, but no, you're done with the ghoul puns. One
No,
may come to you.
I'm done with the ghoul puns. However, I've realized that for any viewers on YouTube, I have a very strange background and I haven't yet revealed the ghoul. The ghoul is behind me. I'm just hanging out with the ghouls, me and the girl, ghouls. It's a ghoul's night out, you could say.
The ghoul was there all along, hiding right
Exactly.
behind you, hidden in plain sight. So here we are at the round table. We come in with Sam in voiceover, telling us that the focus is going to be whether or not to go for Brad, or just let others go for Kate, which they seem to be leaning towards. In my opinion, I say, Sam, leave Brad. Don't go for him. Don't stand out. We've talked about this throughout the episode. As a well, in a different way, we talked about traitors not wanting to stand out. Even as a faithful, I'd say don't stand out from the crowd. And if you really feel that Brad's a traitor, and she's right, of course, go and listen to our, you referenced this earlier, our How to Win the Traitors Double Bill episode. One of our top tips for faithfuls in this game is don't focus on genuinely eliminating the traitors this early in the game. Keep them around. You have to listen to that episode to find out why we suggest this. But Sam, my advice, I want to jump into the TV and say, stay quiet. Just leave them for now. It's only like the second round table. Stop. So here we are. Madeline arrives, gives them the big team morale speech, find those evil traitors, and so on, and discussion opens. Aaron begins and recognizes, yes, three people voted for me last night. He wants to clear his name as best he can. And he uses the fact that he didn't vote for Ryan or Elliot as a sign that he wasn't just following the crowd. He wasn't doing what a traitor would probably do. A traitor probably would just copy everybody else and try and get a faithful out. But he's saying, well, I didn't do that. Surely a traitor wouldn't do that. Sam then comes in to ask, well, why did people vote for him round the table? Why did you vote for Aaron last night? Because his name wasn't really discussed. These votes just sort of appeared when it was time to vote. Hannah speaks up. She voted for Aaron and says, actually, now I've completely changed my mind. Aaron, the way that you just spoke up, the way you volunteered to go first and defend yourself, actually, I think a traitor wouldn't do that. I don't know if a traitor wouldn't do that, but she happens to be right this time. And so we move on a little. Aroha speaks and says she wants to look at the people who swapped their votes last night in the revote. And Violet clearly explains what you and I spoke about at the start of this episode, that Freudian slip by Ryan, and Violet saying, I couldn't ignore that. Brad echoes this too. But Kate was the opposite. Kate had to switch from Ryan to Elliot. So she, I think, doesn't do a great job of defending herself. She explains her initial vote for Ryan. She says, well, I voted for Ryan the first time because of what I saw after the traitor selection. It was his body language. He looked so nervous and agitated. But then at the round table, everyone convinced me to vote for Elliot because of what I was hearing there, which still doesn't make sense to me. But because why didn't you vote for Elliot during the first vote? Like, what changed between the first and the second vote? That's what she doesn't answer. And there's even a shot of Chloe looking very confused and unconvinced by this. Then Sam comes in and she tells them. So I thought, oh, right, is she going to go for Brad here? Is she going to do it? And she tells them she absolutely wants to catch a traitor. She's going to put names out. But then she doesn't really. She doesn't say Bradley's name. The conversation swerves away very quickly to who's not spoken up much at the round table. And Sam turns to Jill to question her. So she sort of swerved from one traitor to another traitor, whether she meant it or not. And Jill has got very little to offer. So earlier I said I thought Jill was doing quite a good job when she was talking to Keanu. Here, not so effective, maybe. She doesn't name any suspects still. It doesn't look great. And she says, oh, all I can say is that the people I trusted at the beginning are still here, and they're still the people I trust. I don't know what else to add.
So we need to think, what are the editors doing to us here? Because I'm sure that people at the round table stumble over their words and say, I don't really know. I haven't really got anyone. I'm sure people say that all the time, but they included footage of Jill doing that. That tells me that they are leading us down a path of saying, I suppose it's interesting that a traitor is fumbling so early on. We only ever see them speaking eloquently in usually complete sentences and making their point forcefully. That's called editing because, as we know, the roundtable goes on for hours and we see about 10, 15 minutes of it.
Now, Violet questions Kate again and claims that Kate said something like, this was yesterday, said something like, I couldn't write down Ryan's name tonight. This was before the round table. That would just make me so devastated, or I couldn't possibly do it. But then she did do it. And Kate also really sort of waffles and rambles here and doesn't explain things well at all. She says, oh, I got to know Ryan really well. I felt a bit of a bond with him. We lived in the same place. Aroha corrects that and says, no, he doesn't live. Is it Wellington? She says, no, he didn't live there. And Kate replies by just going, oh, then maybe that's editing. Maybe she did explain it and they've chosen a little clip of her saying that to make her look bad. If not, I thought, Kate, Don't just look like you've been caught out. Explain why did you think he lived somewhere that he didn't live? Like, give us an explanation. But we just see her going, oh, and nothing else. So I hope there was more to it than that. And there's not much more. We have Maruya saying, well, whoever the traitors are, they're doing a great job. Well done to them. But Madeline returns to end their little chatty chat time, she calls it. Time to
I would
go.
say that she swept in. I think Madeline is making a real feature out of the Madeline sweep. She comes
Ooh.
sweeping into the room. We don't have a lot. We have more creeping from Karine and Alan and Claudia. It's a little bit more of a creep, and this is a sweep.
A
I'm here
sweep,
for
a sweep. Okay, the Madeline sweep.
it.
And so let's find out what the outcome of this roundtable will be. I mean, that's a
Congratulations.
very, very literal use of that word, and
Yeah.
we've used something slightly more abstract. Here we go. Maria is first. I shouldn't have clapped. Shouldn't clap on a podcast. Maria votes for Kate. I'm just excited. James votes for Jill, which I believe is the first vote for a traitor. Unless Jill, did she get some votes last night? I can't remember. First vote for a traitor. This round table at least. And then a slew of votes for Kate. Dave, Aaron, Elliot, Aroha all vote for Kate. Interesting that Elliot voted for her. Is it a little bit of payback for last night? Is he just trying to blend in with the crowd because he knows he doesn't want to, he wants to avoid what happened last night? I don't know. Debbie then votes for Sam, which feels like a bit of a swerve. She thinks, her reason is she thinks that Sam's behaviour is very different at this round table. We move on. Jill votes for Kate and admits like, well, I'm just sort of trusting what everyone else is saying, so I'll just go for Kate too, I guess. So yes, Jill, you're probably gonna have to do more than that next time. Brad votes for Kate. Kate votes for Harrison. It's Michael. I forgot Michael was back. How could I forget the ghoul was here? He votes for Jill. Very interesting. Just interesting because he's not had as long in the castle. He's only been with them for a few hours. Is he noticing something that others aren't noticing? Is he not being as
Yeah.
swayed by everybody else? I don't know.
It's very impressive, actually, because there's still, what, about 20 of them? Like, that's really impressive to pick one of the three traitors. So, yeah, interesting. And it might be that just having fresh eyes coming in and saying, something's a bit off.
Yeah. Sam is next and votes for Kate. So she didn't come for Brad after all. She tells us in confessional she's going to keep that in her back pocket and she doesn't want to shoot and miss at the wrong time. Yes, I agree. Wait as long as possible. If there is one more vote for Kate, she will be gone and Hannah is next. And crying reveals that she has voted for Kate. So Madeline explains, you will be banished, but we'll go through the remaining votes. And all five of the remaining votes are for Kate. Maruya, Violette, Chloe, Harrison, and Keanu. So pretty decisive. Poor Kate, I feel bad for her. She's crying. I say this all the time on the pod. Oh, I feel so bad for them. But I do. I really feel sorry for her. Because although I just said I don't think she defended herself very well, I don't really know what good reason they have other than that. Yeah, I know there was a weird vote last night, but is that enough of a reason to think she's a traitor? Because she flipped a vote to someone that half them had already voted for anyway. If I was her, I'd be like, why are you mad I voted for Elliot? You all voted for Elliot. Just because it changed.
Yeah,
Anyway.
but I think it's in her explanations.
Yeah.
She just didn't do a good job whatsoever in any of the things that she was trying to defend herself against. She didn't defend herself well in any of the regards. It's just, and I was thinking, is it a thing of like just being a younger player? A little bit of lack of confidence maybe and of experience to defend yourself. But then I was just thinking through other franchises. Do younger players often get, voted off, banished early? I'm not sure. It would be
I don't
interesting to
think
do
so. Yeah.
a no. But that lack of there's something about that lack of kind of outward energy. The kind of slightly more discreet, slightly quieter, slipping on your words a little bit, that combination, whatever age, I suppose, is a recipe, unfortunately, for people to jump on it. You have to be able to defend yourself. And the best way to do so, let's be clear, is calmly and confidently. You need both of them. If you go too confidently, then it looks like you're, oh, he doth protest too much. And if you're just too quiet and not, but you need that, quiet poise and confidence to defend yourself. And then, like might happen with Elia or other players in the past, people just put their attention elsewhere. But Kate didn't, when she was put under the spotlight, and sadly, she just wilted in that moment. It was really sad to see because she seems like a lovely person.
Yeah, and even her goodbye speech is fairly subdued or sort of reserved in a way, which is funny because she's an actor and she says, I came on as an actor and I wanted to play as an actor. That's what I'm used to doing. I'm used to lying. And because she says that, we get some reactions of people thinking, oh, we've done it, we've done it. But then she reveals, I am a faithful. She leaves. Madeline chastises them, bids them sweet dreams. They're obviously all disappointed. They have a little time to talk about it in the castle before bedtime. Dave, Maruya, and Aroha, chat in the kitchen, and they wonder, well, who didn't vote for Kate tonight? They mention Debbie. They find it odd. I'm not sure why it's odd that she didn't vote for Kate, but it's odd that she voted for Sam. That felt a bit left field. And Maruya even comes to Debbie and asks, why did you vote for Sam? It seemed to come from nowhere. Debbie just says, well, I had no idea what I was going to do, didn't know where I was going to place my vote. It was, I had to pick someone. It was one thing that I noticed. And Maruya tells us, well, if she's a traitor or a bad faithful, she needs to go, talking about Debbie. Like maybe that she's not really helping the group get traitors out. Jill then comes to, but although for all Maruya knows, Sam is a traitor, but hey, Jill comes to James to ask about his vote for her, and he immediately says, oh, it's fine, I don't suspect you anymore. I could tell the way that you reacted. I could see how hurt you were. It was really emotional. It wasn't a defensive reaction, so I'm convinced you're faithful. It's fine. So Jill must be thinking, well, that was easy. Okay. I mean, of course, a reaction as a traitor can still be emotional too. I don't think that means you're not a traitor because you looked like you were hurt. So I don't think James should rule someone out for that reason. Keanu and Brad meet alone in a room. And Brad is now he's turning on Jill. He says that her ship is sinking and he wants to abandon that ship. And he's telling Keanu, look, if she's sinking next time, just let her. Like, we shouldn't. If she's going to go and she's going to get votes, don't defend her. Unsurprisingly, Keanu tells us he's not really into this. He's got his own plan, and that plan is Brad. They all begin saying goodnight, night night, off we go. And the episode ends here. Where's our conclave chat? What's going on? So normally we have our sort of predictions at this point, but there's not really much to do because we don't have a murder shortlist or anything. However, I am going to ask you a couple of questions about what may be to come, and we have one or two listener questions to address. Before that, Magicka, can you tell us now where we can find you online? How can we keep up with you? How can we learn from your wisdom and knowledge?
You can learn from my wisdom and knowledge by listening to this podcast and my terrible ghoul puns. That's my main hobby now is going to be replacing the word girl with the word ghoul. When you've had enough of that, you can find me on Substack. I'm getting ready to post all kinds of interesting things, and it's totally free to follow me. It's going to be thoughts about music and how we listen to music can improve how we listen to each other. That's the main theme of what I'm doing these days. I offer workshops and coaching around that, as well as getting on with music. And so you can follow me, links in the show notes, but it's very simply magicka.substack.com.
Perfect. And as for the pod, it's we're all over social media on Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube. And there's so much more to that than just listening to the pod alone. I post little updates about what's happening in the Traitors Verse, what new seasons are coming, what other shows are we potentially going to be covering on the pod. I like to upload little videos and messages sometimes. That's all at the Trade Hour podcast, and you can use those places to send me your thoughts and questions about what's happening in the show. You can email me at thetradearpodcast@gmail.com. You can also send a voice note to the pod, like we've just heard from, well, just heard, it was like an hour ago, from some of the players. I've got another voice note to play in a few moments from one of our fantastic listeners and previous co-hosts. So that's at memo.fm/thetradearpodcast. And very importantly, I said I would return to this. Now is the time. I have been talking to Magicka about the online game that I host. And so I am going to host a game. Well, there is one on the 27th of June, but that's sort of evening time in the UK. So if you're in Australia or New Zealand, it's not ideal for you. So ahead of that, I mean, beyond that, I'm going to host a game on, this is a couple months away, Sunday, the 23rd of August. I'll host it at 8 a.m. UK time, which is 7 p.m. in New Zealand. That's sort of it's starting at 4 p.m. at the west of Australia over. So late afternoon, evening, Australia, New Zealand time, 23rd of August. The tickets are online now. Actually, I will put a QR code on the screen right now if you're watching on YouTube that will take you to the ticket links. If you're not watching on YouTube, you can find the link in the episode description or head to social media. It's in all the social media bios. Send me a message if in doubt if you want to know more about it. A couple of more things before we get to a listener question. You can support the podcast in a couple of ways. You could visit thetradar.redbubble.com, where there's all sorts of merch, like this t-shirt that I'm wearing right now, and many, many other things, notebooks, magnets, stickers, phone cases, all sorts. I have one of the notepads. I have a sticker on the back of my phone that's got the Tradar on it, so I'm enjoying the merch myself. Or you could visit ko-fi.com, where you can put in a donation of whatever amount you choose. Without subscribing, you can do it as a one-off. That's at ko-fi.com/Matthew Keeley. And thank you to everybody who has already done one of those things. I really, really appreciate it. Okay, like I said, can't really predict what's going to happen in terms of murder. We don't know who the traitors are looking at. We don't have a shortlist. But I do want to ask, why do you think the episode ended here? We didn't get any conclave tonight. Is it because they thought that the suggestion of traitor versus traitor was enough of a cliffhanger itself? Is it because something explosive is going to happen at the conclave, so you can't fit that into the last 5 minutes? Any predictions?
I will answer your question with a question. Where is this show coming out? We live in such confusing times. Is it on broadcast television or is it streaming first?
As far as I understand, it's broadcast first and then it is on streaming after it's played. Like, I might be wrong, but I know that it's like episode 3 was on New Zealand TV on Sunday evening, and then episode 4 was on Monday evening. But yeah, I don't know if
Oh,
episode 4 was immediately available as soon as episode 3 was available. So I'm not actually sure.
you can see where I'm going with it, because if it's separated by a day, then that is a really weird, slightly, confusing cliffhanger, which we've almost never had, in that it's not really a cliffhanger. It's just, oh, there might in the future be some traitor on traitor violence, like there always is. The reason I ask is that if they're doing the two episode drop and it's streaming first, then that's absolutely fine, because you just watch the following episode. And interestingly, broadcast schedules in France, where I lived for a long time, although I never had a television in France, I only had my computer, on actual TV, very weirdly, they have this habit of broadcasting two and sometimes three episodes of the same show all on the same night. So they'll burn through a season, something like Death in Paradise that has maybe eight episodes. They'll burn through that in like 3 weeks, because they'll go episode one and two, sometimes episode one, two, three, episode four, five, six, episode seven, eight, done. It's really weird. And even Bake Off, they have like two episodes in a row. It's just the evening is the same show. So if that's what they were doing, then it makes perfect sense. Have a little cup of tea, maybe show some adverts, get some food, come back, and then let's see where this story goes. Because if it's a standalone episode, super weird ending, super low key. Having said that, by this point, I do think sometimes cliffhangers are overstated, we're in. I mean, the cast is great, the show is great. I'm not going to say, I wasn't enough of a cliffhanger, I think I won't come back for episode four, you know?
Yeah. And if you were a traitor, are there any faithful players you would be targeting? Is there anyone you would be worried about at this point, based on what we've seen?
It's a tricky one. I think you could still play the game of trying to frame someone. So I would be looking for a conversation, anyone who's mentioned anyone else, faithful, unfaithful, basically, and do it there. I wouldn't be doing any of the double, triple bluffs yet. And anyway, they're not a cohesive conclave. So that's going to be tricky because, you know, I was really shocked, to be honest, how Keanu came in and said, it's going to be Janiyah, that's it, you know. And then Bradley, because it immediately puts the backup of your fellow traitors. But I don't think Keanu cares, which I really respect, but it's going to be very interesting to see where this goes.
Yes. I again have actually seen episode four, or most of it. I haven't quite finished, but I know too much, so I won't claim to predict anything here. We have a voice note, and this is from your fellow player from Traitors. This is from Maria, who's been on the podcast a few times. Maria's a big fan of the show, Traitors expert, and will probably be back co-hosting with me at some point, I hope. Maria sent a little voice note. Let's listen to that now.
Hey, this is Maria. I noticed during Traitors New Zealand season 3 that at breakfast, Debbie and Bradley were wearing the exact same outfit. They were sitting right next to each other, and he just so happens to have the same name as her son-in-law. So that's hilarious and proof that this is not a scripted show, because if this was scripted, they wouldn't let two people wearing the same outfit sit next to each other. And they probably wouldn't even let two people wear the same outfit to the same breakfast. All right. Everybody go play Matthew's live trader game. It's very fun, even though I'm terrible at it. Bye.
Thank you, Maria. You're not terrible at it. You made it fairly far, as I remember. I am going to put a picture on the YouTube version of this pod to show you Bradley and Debbie's matching outfits. I'm going to share it with you right now, Magicka. Do you see this on your screen?
Oh.
So very matchy matchy.
Mean, can I just say, just I'm not getting naked here.
Oh
We're
my,
not a
right, I see.
million. We're not a million miles away. I have a kind of, what do you call that, khaki green kind of
Yes.
shirt. This is actually a little bit more greeny tinge, but in the bright light it looks almost beige. So I could blend in. I could be the third member of that family. I'd like
You're
Dibby to be my mom. It's fine.
in the same section of the color wheel. The color palette is syncing up here. If you're not watching on YouTube, to steal it, to almost copyright infringe someone else, if you're not watching on YouTube, you're only getting half the story. So you need to have a look to see what Magicka's wearing. But Maria, I hadn't noticed the matching outfits. Yes, very interesting. Maybe, yeah, if this was all rigged and scripted, they might have been told, you can't wear the same clothes as each other and sit right next to each other. Hey. So thank you for that, Maria. That gave me a good laugh. I will be back very soon with another co-host. I'm going to be looking to episode four of this season of Traitors New Zealand. Very excited. Magicka, thank you so much for coming back on the pod. It is a joy, as always, to have your insights and your puns, your ghoul puns.
I might have just come up with one last one just as my final leaving comment.
Okay, great. Until we are back, send me your thoughts and questions, as always. Love to have them to discuss on the pod. Have several questions to discuss next time. Looking forward to it. Until then, laters, traitors.
Let's go, ghouls.
Ha 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 ha!